Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, Brian Windhorst and the Hoop Collective. You know Brian from when he's been on the pod. They post episodes on Tuesday and Friday mornings bright and early. The NBA playoffs are in full swing, so be sure to check it out for the latest analysis and reactions. You can follow Brian Windhorst and the Hoop Collective as well as The Right Time wherever you get your podcast. The playoffs are here, so be sure to check it out. Follow the Woj Pod now as well as The Right Time wherever you get your podcast. Also, if you're looking for world-class soccer, ESPN Plus is where to find it. The best teams, the biggest stars, and over 20 international leagues and tournaments. La Liga, Bundesliga, MLS, FA Cup, Copa del Rey, and more. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com. The Right Time is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is Foxworth Fridays here. Dominique Foxworth of The Undefeated. What's going on?
What's up, man?
Hey, man, look, other day, getting ready, wake up, you know, like I thought I had a pretty good handle on what had happened on the basketball games the night before. I wake up, Chris Paul got the cooties. Kawhi Leonard got that knee. Everybody got fired.
It went nuts. All while can I call them your Hawks now? I know you were on the fence.
Nah. I decided not to do that.
Okay, good. Because it would have been hard for you to celebrate the Hawks win, considering that the biggest shot of the game, your boy Trae Young, went with the old insurance fraud. Oh, man. I hated that.
In the second half of that game, and again, it was effective. I'm not pretending as though I don't recognize that these things worked, right? However, they were running the hack of Ben, and as much as I got to say about Ben Simmons, I hate the hack of blank strategy. I just find it to be unseemly and unbecoming, man. I'm not big on it. And then Trae Young went out there and got down with that insurance fraud at the end, and I was just like, see, I can't support this.
The hack of Ben stuff, yeah, it doesn't bother me that much, like hacking a particular player. It's like makes me a little uncomfortable and sad for them to put them on that stage in that moment. But it's like, all right, it is what it is. I guess as a cornerback getting isolated out there, it's hard for me to engender any sympathy because somebody's on an island and got to shoot a free throw. However, diving, pump faking, and then throwing your body forward into a man in the most clutch moment of the game. I'm normally not one to complain about the insurance fraud that Trae Young and, like, I guess James Harden had the most success with. But that particular moment, like, they have to do something about that particular rule because that is just terrible. It's ugly in that moment. We want to see you shoot that big shot. We want the stress and the excitement and the drama of the ball being in the air and us not knowing if you're going to take the lead or lose. We don't want you diving at people so you can get free throws.
Nah, nobody's here for that. Like, for the youngsters who may not remember this, right? They got the rule now where if a defensive player in football jumps into the neutral zone, basically, if the offensive player moves after the defensive player jumps, they now call the penalty on the defensive player, which was not always the case because there was a gentleman named Neil Smith who played for the Chiefs who revolutionized football by drawing the offensive player offside. Like it used to be like, oh man, the offense drew the defense off. That was what it was. Neil Smith was lurching on them cats, right? Had them petrified. And then they're like, okay, this isn't what the game is supposed to be. And so they changed up the rule. And I feel like that is the kind of insurance fraud that Trae Young is out here engaging in.
The Neil Smith stuff was an insurance fraud. Like, I've lived my life in football, and every single rule, even the rules that are written to be, like, equal, are biased towards the offense. We can't give you a little flinch? Like, we don't get nothing. We get a flinch, and they take it away?
I'm just saying that every rule in the insurance game is designed to help the insurance company also, right? Like it does not mean that when we engage in insurance fraud, that it is not a measure of insurance fraud. But no, they have to flip it up. I think this postseason is going to be a bit of an inflection point for the NBA. For them, just got to go back and look at a bunch of stuff, right? Because I think a lot of things have been laid bare about what the game has become and what is functionally not good about it and what is, like, ultimately not that entertaining. Like, this thing about the injuries in the postseason, I don't know what else people think the league was supposed to do, to be honest.
Right. I mean, okay, I'm sorry to commandeer this, but yes. I had to go back to this insurance fraud thing for a second. And it's not about football. I'm going to leave the football alone. But there are different levels, and I tend to root against the big companies as I'm sitting here working for Disney and root against the little guy. So I don't want you to get caught for your insurance fraud. Like, it's fine.
Yeah.
Anyway, there are differences to me. So, like, I hate when guys do that long arm swing to get a foul in order to get their shot off. However, in my view, the result of that is it gets defenders to keep their hands back, and it allows us to see more beautiful basketball. I'm not as much opposed to, like, when they do, like, what I would consider the swoop and stop. Yes. They go around a pick, put a guy on their back, and, like, throw their back into him. I hate it. It's ugly. Yes. However, I think the result of that is they get more space to have better offense. The one that I really hate is the pump fake and jump into somebody. Because to me, the outcome of that does not improve anything. Like, maybe you'll get a guy to not challenge shots, but that's not what I want in those moments. So that's all. I just had to get on my soapbox about that. Now we can go wherever it is that you have planned on going. But it just bothers me. That one in particular really gets under my skin, because it seems to me like it's hard for me to understand how that results in me enjoying the experience anymore.
Well, so this is the thing about the pump fake that is interesting now that I think about it, which is the pump fake means something different from outside now than it used to. Because, you know, the big adage in basketball is never foul a jump shooter, because the likelihood of the shot going in is just not high enough to justify you hacking. Except you got these cats like Trae Young now that are shooting these bad boys from the parking lot, and players have to be more aggressive now in contesting those shots. You can't just assume, and not from everybody, but from this caliber of player, you can't just assume, like, I'm just going to play the odds and I think he's going to wind up missing it. And so now that those guys have to do that, it feels even more unseemly that this insurance fraud has been weaponized in the way that it has.
It bothers me. I understand, like, the value of protection for, like, somebody landing under your foot. I understand that rule. Like, that makes sense to me, because they want to protect the stars. But this is just ugly, because the result of the game has gotten uglier to me. And I guess maybe it'll get guys to stop challenging shots and they'll get off cleaner shots, but I don't want that. It doesn't make the game more enjoyable to me. So, like, this particular rule, like, to me, and it's been a problem for a long time, like, this isn't a new thing. Some of these new, like, the long arm swing that they do to get that foul, like, that's relatively new. The pump fake and jump into a guy is old, and I've always hated it.
Yeah, now, I'll get back to the injury thing later, because you talking about Trae Young got me thinking about Ben Simmons. And, like, I mean, this postseason is kind of exposing him, and it's not as though it's exposing things that we haven't seen previously or that we had no other reason or any other awareness of what some of the shortcomings and limitation of his game were. However, like, put him next to Trae Young, for example. If you were to ask me going into this postseason which one of them was a better player, I would tell you unequivocally that it was Ben Simmons. Wouldn't have thought twice. And if you ask me now which of them is a better player, I probably still say Ben Simmons. Like, that's part of why watching him is so frustrating, is because he is a better player slash should be a better player, except what Trae Young got that Ben Simmons doesn't have is right here. Is right here in the cabeza, because Ben Simmons is shook. Shook, I tell you, shook. Trae Young never shook. Ben Simmons, whenever they run the Hack of Ben, like when they used to run like Hack of Shaq or the Dwight Howard hacks or DeAndre Jordan, them dudes might go up there and miss their free throws, but at least they didn't look like they was about to piss on themselves. Right? Like Ben Simmons, every time he goes to the line, he looks like, can I get there in time? Looks like he's running to the free throw line and already trying to undo his belt so that he does not, up too late, just all over myself.
It's so hard to measure the impact on the rest of the team psychologically. Like, I think that's one thing that might go unnoticed, because your point about Shaq is a good one. Because Shaq, his free throw percentage, not much better than Ben Simmons in clutch situations. But Shaq felt like a leader. He felt like a guy that wasn't scared of the moment. And I think that is something that permeates when it's your best player or one of your best players, because obviously Embiid is the best player on the team. Like, there has an impact, and I think you and I are some people who bristle at the idea of momentum in a game, but I think that what I do believe is real is there are psychological swings, and I guess that's what you would call momentum. Those impacts happen, and when you have Trae Young on your team, I can imagine feeling confident when your guy is out there irrationally confident. Like, that feels good,
right?
If that's your leader, and if one of your leaders is out there trying to get to the bathroom in time, it's hard not to have what happened in that last game happen to your team.
Yeah, well, like, I think there's a value in a particular type of guy. So, like, Donovan Mitchell, for example. I'm not as wild about Donovan Mitchell as a lot of other people are. Somebody hit me up and was like, how did Rudy Gobert get a second place MVP vote? And the answer was very simple. He's the best player on what was the best team in the NBA in the regular season. And so what you're going to have is a bunch of people that bristle at the idea of Rudy Gobert being the best player on that team. But he was like the best player on that team, kind of like Ben Wallace was the best player on some of those Pistons teams. He's just that dominant of a defensive player. But Donovan Mitchell, whatever weaknesses he happens to have in his game, and I'm not wild about these dudes who really just come out here and all they got for you really is getting buckets. But if it's a 6-0 run against Utah, Donovan Mitchell can stop that from being an 8-0 run, or stop that from being a 9-0 run simply by saying, hey, man, let me get that. It might be a 3. I might get to the rack, but I'm going to go get us a bucket. And every team has to have at least one dude like that. Devin Booker, who I'm not as wild about as a lot of other people are. However, especially in the presence of Chris Paul, to handle all the, you know, grown-up stuff and keeping things in line. Oh, we need a bucket right quick? All right, cool. Let me get that for you. The Sixers, you got to have one of those guys that's not a big man. Because Embiid requires some other people to come get him the ball and everything else. And sometimes, with Embiid, we've seen it. Like, get me the ball in the post and I'll muscle you dudes. But your big man can't be the only guy who can do that. And the Sixers don't have that guy. They got two dudes making $30-something million a year, and neither one of them you can count on to be like, all right, hold up, fellas. I'm going to take care of this. And Tobias Harris, I mean, my thing with Tobias Harris is, why'd you give him $30 million? Like, he is the dude. This is the dude that he has always been. With Simmons, though, this was supposed to be different. This was supposed to be a superstar caliber of player. And he's out there shook.
I mean, I think your point about somebody go out there and get a bucket is important. We always think about this, a wings league. When I was growing up, we were like, man, it's a big man's league.
Right.
And then Jordan was like the aberration. But I kind of feel like it's always been a wings league. Like, when you come down to those big moments, you need somebody. You need somebody who don't care about scheme. You need somebody who is not about the offense. And you need somebody who has missed 5 shots in a row, really believes that next one is going in. To all the analytics people out there, I would imagine that this sounds like cliche and stupid, and maybe it is, but people are cliche and stupid. And the psychological impact of having that is the same as having a quarterback that, you know, you go into the fourth quarter, you're down 10 points, you ain't scared. Like, that impacts you on a defense, the way you go out there and the way you feel. Even if he's not the one on the field, it just feels different.
Yeah, like, the difficulty, I think, in like applying the analytics to the postseason is, like, I mentioned this on TV, but my man Nate Jones, he's a Jones on the NBA at Twitter, he made a great point about Giannis. He says one of the biggest differences about regular season Giannis and postseason Giannis is, in the regular season, ain't nobody stepping in there to take those charges, right? In the postseason, people are willing to get in front of the freight train, and then all he's got once you get in front of the freight train is the spin in either direction. Right? Like, he doesn't have any other counter other than that spin. But that doesn't matter so much in the regular season. And so once you get to the playoffs, it becomes a lot less about what you can do, and it becomes a lot more about what you can't do. And teams are putting you in positions to where they're going to make you do the things either you can't do or you have demonstrated yourself to be unwilling to do. And with Ben Simmons, that's what shooting is. Again, I can't say that he can't shoot because he doesn't. I have no opportunity to evaluate whether or not he is capable of such a thing. I don't know if he can play the violin either. He don't do that on the basketball court. You know, like, for all I know, he's a virtuoso. I've just never been in a situation to see such a thing. And so you can take these large, and I like the numbers, but we can take what we get out of the 82-game sample, and it turns into something different in the smaller ones. So their guys, Rudy Gobert, again, comes up as an example here. He is an advanced stats monster in the regular season. In the postseason, pretty good. Like, his counting stats stay about the same, but the advanced stuff that's supposed to pick up all those things that your eye might not capture, those kind of go down. Nikola Jokic, his first postseason, he was maybe the best player in the playoffs. The last two, he's been a very good player, but he hasn't been a player like on those levels, because whatever your team can't do, that's what you're about to be forced and put into a position to have to deal with. And with Ben Simmons, they're like, you can't shoot free throws? Well, now we're going to make you do that.
That's when coaching comes into play, frankly. And you're right about the numbers, because it's a different sport. And I make a lot of football analogies because I understand football, but people say playoff football is different, but it's not really that different. you prepare and you game plan for an entire week for one opponent. That's what happens in the regular season. That's what happens in the postseason. The intensity, pretty close to the same. You might bring out a couple new wrinkles and gadgets, but it's the same thing. It's a one-game sample where you have a week to prepare for it. The NBA is not like that. And a coach like Coach Bud will run out there all season and they'll do similar things. No one is really preparing for those things. No one's necessarily preparing to stop those things. So he's not tested in a way where he has to do in-game adjustments or game-to-game adjustments within a series. And so it feels like he gets exposed. He gets exposed because he allows Giannis to get exposed. Because when they change things, they don't change anything. And to me, isn't that what coaching is? Like, coaching is adjusting, and he's not able to do that in Doc Rivers' defense, even though they haven't looked great, at least it appears to me. And again, I have a lamest eye, so maybe I'm wrong, but it appears to me that he's out there mixing up lineups. He's running different sets. Like, he's trying stuff. It may not be the right stuff, but he's trying.
So, on football, I will say, like, the example I use to point out that playoff football is a bit different is Peyton Manning, right? And Peyton Manning, legendarily, run the same stuff in the playoffs that he run during the year, which, by the way, could fit on an index card already, right? Like, it was always about precision. Same receiver, like, this is going to be what? Marvin Harrison on the left. It's going to be Reggie Wayne on the right every single time. And we go run one of, like, seven plays, and it's just going to be a matter of you stopping it. And then in the playoffs, everybody else throws in something new. Peyton Manning out here doing the same thing, and then he looks up like, oh, I haven't seen this blitz. I got you. Boom. There, you know, like that's where you go. Yeah. Budenholzer's basically running it the same way. He is on the, well, we just need to do what we do better, and you got to do something to make things easier for your guys. And that's the thing about Giannis is, as much as the criticisms of his performances have been fair, but once you know there's some things that he can and cannot do, that's where the coach comes in and puts him in better positions to make these things easier on him. And they don't.
Yeah, I mean, it's also about forcing the other team to adjust too. So, like, it always feels like they're in a defensive posture. And it's like, I think links with your Peyton Manning point is Peyton Manning, the way that he liked to play was he liked to react to what you were doing. That's what made him so deadly, because he could figure out what defense you were in. And then he would pick one of the five concepts that they have, because there aren't that many concepts in football. One of the five concepts, he would pick the one that attacked the weakness of the defense that you were in. But if you were able to switch it up and he didn't know what was coming, like, it would take him a series or two to figure that out. And then once he got there, you go do something different. And then it would take him a series or two. And as long as you're scoring on offense, next thing you know, you got a 14-point lead in the fourth quarter and you're in a good situation. The same thing to me feels like it's happening because for the Bucks. Because the other team doesn't have to adjust. Their coaches aren't on the sideline thinking, how are we going to adjust to this new way that they're attacking, which allows them to kind of go in the lab. It allows them to put all their resources towards how are we going to mess with Coach Bud. And then they're just waiting and reacting. And that's just too late, especially when you don't got a guy that it don't matter. A guy that don't matter. Give him the rock. Get out the way. Whatever they're doing, don't matter. Let him cook.
Let me ask this, though, because you mentioned Doc Rivers, and it was interesting because Doc did seem to be trying to adjust, although it doesn't appear his adjustments were very good, and now he has become the patron saint of blowing leads. It's a little tricky for me on Doc when it comes to that, because you could point out, like, the 3-1 leads that were blown. Now, one of them, it was in Orlando, and he was coaching Tracy McGrady, and I have no idea who else was on that team. And they lost to the Pistons that were, those Pistons that became the Pistons, right? The one where he was coaching the Clippers, and they blew that 3-1 lead to Houston, that team just ran out of gas. Like, I remember watching that team, and their starting lineup was the best lineup in the NBA. Like, if you looked at plus minus, and I think that was the first year the Warriors won the championship, their starting lineup was the best lineup on plus minus in the NBA, but they had nobody after that. And you just watched as that series went on. They just ran out of gas, and they didn't have anything left. And this team, I don't know what, I mean, Embiid out here on a torn meniscus, and people got mad at me about this when I was like, yo, he's got a torn meniscus. They're like, oh, he's just day-to-day. I'm like, yeah, he's day-to-day, but he's going to have a torn meniscus. That thing ain't going to untear in the time period. And he's out of gas at the end every time, because he and, surprisingly, Seth Curry are carrying everybody else. And I just can't imagine how frustrated Embiid is, especially since it ain't like Ben Simmons is a popular guy. You know what I'm saying?
I don't have any criticism of Embiid. I think that we tend to criticize the stars in these moments, and it's fair to do to many stars in these situations. But it's hard for me to find criticism of Embiid. A 7-footer with a torn meniscus that they have not attempted to repair in any way, because I mean, you can't really repair meniscus. I'm not a doctor, obviously, but he's doing permanent damage to his knee right now because a meniscus tear, and he may be making it worse. Because a meniscus tear, what you normally do is you go and you cut out the tear. You don't then replace the meniscus. So if you don't cut out the tear, then it could be potentially tearing even more and create arthritis and bad situations. So I imagine that his knee aches throughout the course of the game, and he's still putting up numbers. And then he look around like, where's my help? You remember that crying face after they lost to the Raptors? Like, if I was him, I would have that face after every game. You can judge me, meme me, mock me, or whatever, but I'm out here on one leg putting up damn near 40 a night. Rebounding and catching the ball at the elbow, and they asked me to create. Like, they asked me to create. They asked me to protect the rim. They asked me to score all these points, and my best help is the other Curry.
Yo, that's it. What are the rest of y'all here for?
Why?
Right, because like, one thing I got to give Seth, and I really have to give this to Dale Curry. And I say this because one thing you have to remember about these Curry boys is part of why they weren't highly recruited in high school is they didn't play high-level AAU. Like, they were playing ball at Charlotte Christian High School or Charlotte Christian School with a bunch of kids like them Currys. Like, that's what it was. But they are fearless, right? Like, Steph's went to Davidson. Seth's first stop in school was at Liberty. Don't forget that. And then he transferred to Duke, and he wasn't scared then. He had to do all the grinding to get to the league. If you had Seth Curry's mentality and you put that into Ben Simmons. Ben Simmons is a top five player in the NBA. No question about it. Everybody else, though, Tobias Harris, you know my man Leroy Hoard. Love Leroy. Leroy had a great line when he was playing. He was like, hey, man, if you need 1 yard, I'm going to get you 3. If you need 5 yards, I'm going to get you 3. All right? That's Tobias Harris, man. He got 18-7 right here. I got you for 18-7. If you're looking for more than 18, I mean, I wouldn't count on it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I might be able to give it to you, but I won't count on it. And Embiid just looking around like, this is why I call myself the process, right? Because my favorite thing about Embiid is the process used to actually be a process, and he housed the whole damn thing. Like, when people now say trust the process, they talk about me now. And I don't blame him because he's looking right at what the rest of the process was. And he like, I'm the last one left.
Yeah, all that losing got you Embiid. I guess maybe you could say it was worth it. But I feel like this show has become a show about the psychology of athletes in many ways. And it leads me to wonder, like, is that the next frontier for like improvement? And I understand teams have team psychologists and guys are focused on that. But the next step is we've tried to find a way to measure and quantify everything. Like, I wonder if that's the next step, is if teams try to find a way to really understand what's happening in guys' brains and then use that not just like anecdotally, because you're right. The things that we see, the fearlessness that we see in players that we love, is great for certain players. And then some players, it's the reason why they stink because you don't have the skill level. So like, a good role player is not only a guy who is not quite good enough to be a star, it's a guy who recognizes that he's not quite good enough to be a star. And I imagine that there's some mental makeup that fits that mold. And that's a hard thing to measure. You don't know that about players necessarily.
I wonder what's worse, trying to carry like a bum or bums, or the guy who doesn't realize he's a bum. Or I guess the worst would be having to carry a bum who does not know that he is a bum. Because that has to be like trying to carry a child that keep on flailing and throwing elbows. You know what I'm saying? Because I still got to carry you. Like, I still have to do this, and you out here messing it up.
Yeah, I like where you started with that analogy, but I'm going to take us to the pool because that's where it feels like it's more apt. Because like, say somebody is struggling in the deep end and you go grab them and they start flailing, like a couple of them swings and kicks might propel us in the right direction. A couple of them too might drag us down. Just give me a limp body so I know what I'm dealing with. So like, if you know you a bum, when we get to the fourth quarter, 5 minutes left, go stand in the corner. Like, that's what you do. Don't come up here asking for the ball, waving off screens. Like, nah, that ain't what you here for. Go be a limp body so I can drag us to shore, please.
This is the story of just about every star football player in high school. Because it's 10 of them. It's 10 of them.
Yeah. I mean, I obviously was a star football player at my high school. And people recognized the hierarchy. Like, when it was time. They looked at me and they was like, let's go. If I failed, then they was like, man, we just wasn't going to do it today. We were down to a team that was worse than us. It was a surprising thing, but they like game plan around stopped me and they slowed me down. And then the last 8 plays of our game winning drive, the coach called the same play. It was back before I played quarterback. I was a junior. He just handed me the ball. It was a straightforward dive. Like, go ahead. We're going to do this 8 times in a row. This is the best thing we got. We either going to win or we not going to win. And nobody was mad. We ain't had receivers like, you should have threw it to me. They was loading the box. Nope.
But see, the thing with Simmons is, Simmons ain't a limp body in the water. He like, he a dead body in the water. Like we need you to come alive. Like, yeah. like that's the whole thing. It's just like, no. I don't think you understand. Yeah. Your job has to involve these other things. Because the buckets that we got in the regular season from Cork Motts, you might have got a couple from Thibault, even Seth Curry, that's all gravy. Like, these are people that you can't count on. And if you're going to be the dude that Ben Simmons wants to be and the way that Ben Simmons sees himself, then you have to be somebody to count on. Like, look, that dude, Paul George, the thing I've said about Paul George has been, you can't count on him. Like, the biggest problem that you get from him is that every now and then he'll go for like 35, 36 or something like that, but you can't count on him. And it'd be more important if you could count on him. And then Kawhi Leonard gets hurt and Paul George comes out here and has the game of his life. His life. He was like, okay, I guess I got to be the one to go get this done. And he came out and he put up 37 and double-digit rebounds because somebody had to do it. If Joel Embiid can't play in any of these games, they don't have a single dude who could say, well, all right, then, I'm going to get it done. Because if you think you're going to win in the playoffs on team play, maybe Utah and Phoenix can pull that off, but the Sixers can't.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know that Utah and Phoenix are doing that. Because, I mean, without Conley, I feel like the answer in Utah is obviously Mitchell. At some point, he's like, I'm going to get it done. And the answer in Phoenix, you already talked about it. It's like Devin Booker can do that in... Honestly, Chris Paul, maybe he's not the scorer, but he controls the game. So it looks like team play, but it's really Chris Paul putting guys in the right position.
You got to have another guy that people can count on. Like, I'm trying to think of championship teams that didn't have a second guy that you could, like, legitimately count on. Maybe those Mavericks would count as that. But they did at least have Jason Kidd, right? Like, it was Jason Kidd definitely at the end of his career, but it was still Jason Kidd, you know? Like you could lean on him, not in the way you lean on Dirk, but you could lean on him to at least be Jason Kidd. Anybody that's winning a championship like the Raptors, we didn't think you could count on Kyle Lowry up until you could, but he in that postseason was a guy that could be like, all right, well, you know, granted, it wasn't too many days that Kawhi couldn't get it done, but it was like, all right, I guess I got to be the one to make something happen right now. I'm going to come out here and make it happen. I ain't think Paul George could be that. Like, I'm wondering about Paul George now. This is interesting. Our opinion of Paul George fell as his role got smaller. Like, when he was the number one dude in Indiana, we were like, yeah, this dude can be that guy. And then he wound up in places where he was the number two, and we're like, damn, Paul George out here looking like a sucker. Then Paul George came out here and was the number one in game 5 against Utah, and it was like, oh, wow, it's Paul George. So I'm starting to think now, I don't think you can win a title with him as your number one, but he might be a number one. But he can't be a number two. He's either got to be a number three or he's got to be a number one.
And you think that's because of his skill set or mentality? Because, like, I don't understand why he can't be a number two, because he doesn't strike me as the type of guy. I mean, I guess he nicknamed himself Playoff P, but he doesn't strike me as the type of guy who's unwilling to kind of take a back seat or be comfortable in that
role. Well, that's the thing. He's maybe too willing to take the back seat. Right?
Okay. Could too he... willing to take a back seat to be a number two, because yes. That's not a role player.
Yeah, yeah. Like, okay. Could he be the guy that when he is the number two, he was the number two with Russell Westbrook, he's the number two with Kawhi Leonard, and maybe he was just a little too comfortable being number two. Like, I mean, you're the number one, you got this, right? Like, maybe he was that guy, but if he's the number one and nobody else is there to do it, cool. Let's get out here and make it happen. But as the number two, you can't count on it. And you need a number two that on one level or another, you can legitimately count on.
He seems like that, but I guess he needs that push. I felt like it maybe was a function of youth and expectations, but when he was going head to head with LeBron and we were like, man, this dude is something special. I felt like he was going to be a number one. And maybe, like I said, maybe it's because he was young. We didn't expect that much from him. And we were like, man, his trajectory is such.
Right.
And he hasn't gotten much better since then. The only thing that's significant that happened was that major injury where he came back from. And he hasn't gotten better. He hasn't changed much since then, but then was really good.
Yeah, but I'll say this, though. As much as I say he hadn't changed that much, man, the Clippers turned this thing around in the playoffs by making Paul George a point guard, which I don't recall ever being the case before. Damn near Magic Johnson, 6'9", out here running the point. And it was effective because Kawhi, man, I mean, I've been saying this for a long time, even through the title run. We've seen the best of Kawhi Leonard. We saw the best of Kawhi Leonard actually in 2017. The 2019 Kawhi Leonard was pretty great. And what we saw in this series from Kawhi Leonard and at the end of the Dallas series, also pretty great. Still not 2017 Kawhi Leonard. Now we're looking at a possible ACL tear after he, you know, in his 10th year in the NBA, after having the previous knee situation.
I don't want to gloss over all this because what popped into my mind when you said Paul George running offense was Ty Lue.
Yeah.
Ty Lue out here doing stuff.
Yo, how does he not get more props? Like,
I don't know.
I mean, I understand this. The dude won a championship with LeBron James, and nobody wants to give you credit for that. But that ain't stopping nobody from giving Spo credit, a man who has never won 50 games without LeBron James.
That's right.
Right? People do not give Lue the credit. They turned those Cleveland teams over in midseason. Like, X's and O's and schematically figuring out what to do on offense, that dude's got it. And that dude knows how to talk to people and deal with people. Like, I don't know if you saw this. Peter Vezzi sent out a tweet. I'm glad somebody sent it to him because Peter Vezzi blocked me. And I wasn't even being mean to him, but he blocked me. But anyway, Peter Vezzi made a point, and he said that the coaches that he went out of his way to give the most hell were the coaches that would trash their own players to him off the record. And he mentioned one example, and it was Doc Rivers. That was the one guy he pointed to as someone who did that, and it was Doc Rivers. Ty Lue is not that, right? Like, Doc's rap from people I've talked to is he's a bit passive aggressive. That ain't Ty Lue. Ty Lue is a sub 6 foot professional athlete. You know, like they are aggressive. That's how they gotten everything. That every morsel of food they've eaten as adults has come in that way. And so you ain't hearing about that stuff about like Kawhi showing up late all the time and Paul George thinking it was a different game for him and everybody else. We ain't hearing about that stuff this year. They don't look like that set of guys this year. And that's because they got a better coach. Chauncey Billups, apparently on the bench, has been a great addition for them. And by the way, at a time where black coaches in the NBA are getting a little harder to find.
I love Chauncey Billups as a human being, and that is not something that you necessarily associate with being a coach, but like, it's just as important as any of the other stuff. Like, being able to manage those relationships and manage those emotions and the expectations and all that stuff is incredibly important, especially on a small team. And I don't mean small like 15-man roster. I mean small, like 7-man rotation.
Right.
That is so important. And then to complement that with the ability to change, try new things, have different ideas, attack the right things, like that goes a long way for a coach. And it's hard for us because we want to focus so much on what's happening on the results and what's happening on the court. If they won, they're a good coach. If they win 50 plus games a year, must be a good coach. This other stuff is so important. The social dynamics. Like, that's what we saw playing out in Dallas, is the off-court social dynamics have fallen apart. And it's hard to argue that that didn't have some impact on the team and will have impact for years to come. And having executives and coaches and players who understand that and manage that is hugely important.
Yo, that Dallas thing is wild, man. Yeah. Like I don't think enough is really being discussed here, because I talked about it here on this podcast. Like, what the deal really is that Mark Cuban is the emperor butt naked right now. You know, like, in terms of him and the way that he runs a team. And I think that us as media worry a lot of times about like going at Mark Cuban, in part because I think most of these people believe that Mark Cuban is smarter than them because he's supposed to be like the tech zillionaire guy, and you know, and then from there, and then he'll push back on all this, and he's got all his ideas, and he says that he got people researching this, researching that, and everything else. But the truth is, they ain't won a playoff series in about 10 years. So when they decided to fire Donnie Nelson, I couldn't really knock that because he didn't have any leg to stand on. But after that report comes out and it basically says everybody hates Bob Vulgaris, and then the other guy winds up leaving, and we are hearing that it's Luka that doesn't like Bob Vulgaris. Nah, dog, you're doing this the wrong way, because you're not getting the people stuff. There's a people dynamic at play here.
Well, I mean, I guess I have not very much to point to say that Mark Cuban is doing it the right way. But the only way that firing Don Nelson was doing it the wrong way is if you believe everything that was in the story. And I imagine that it's not that hard for Don Nelson, who's been around the league for a long time. It's not that hard for him. And no one's reported that he was the source, but it's probably not that hard for him to create a story like this and find enough people to corroborate it and plant the story. So I'm just saying, in this situation, we got to believe Mark Cuban or Don Nelson. I'm not sure who to believe in that situation, but I agree you're doing it wrong if everything in the story is true. If it's not,
get that man
up out of my building immediately. Your key card do not work.
See, the thing for me was, maybe it's Don Nelson, maybe it's Lucas people. There seem to be a lot of people invested in trying to get Bob up out of there. And I don't really know Bob. Like, he's a tweet with Bob every now and then. He'd come on Dan's radio show sometimes when I was in over there. But I always thought that Bob was a fascinating case in this sense, that the stakes that Bob has played the game at as a gambler are actually much higher than the stakes for the people who are doing this on guaranteed contracts and working in front offices. Like, Bob's on some I eat what I kill type thing and had to go in and figure out what is, you know, what are the determinants of winning? What should I look for in this? And then, boom, go get it. So it was always, to me, like a fascinating experiment, the idea that somebody that's been playing a hard, you know, almost a harder game, what it would be if that person ran a team. But the part of that story that hit me, though, was, apparently, Bob's sitting across from the bench, and he's got his laptop out, and I thought that detail was interesting because they just trying to call Bob a nerd. Like, I mean, he's doing his job. He would have a laptop. But him looking at Luka and telling him to calm down, and Luka telling him, don't tell me to calm down. See, that's where the numbers people and the dorks get in trouble. Like, I don't know how familiar you are with John Hollinger.
Mm-hmm.
I can't stand his work. And I'll just tell you why, because I just think he's just so ridiculously mean and unnecessarily mean. It's so much harder to get him to say anything good about any of these players. And then he wound up getting that job in Memphis. And Lionel Hollins hated him. Hated him. Woj had a story once that something happened in his practice, and John Hollinger had somebody to throw him the ball so he could shoot a jumper. And Lionel Hollins told him to get the hell out of there. And it like turned into a thing, because this is a people business. Right? Like, all your observations and all your metrics and everything else, that stuff matters until it doesn't. And that's the thing about the playoffs, too. The playoffs are people time.
I mean, I don't know Bob Balgaris at all, or Alibaba Balgaris at all, but I suspect that I agree with you. The stakes are probably higher as a gambler than as a front office member. However, as a gambler, you could bet on whatever you want. So essentially, you can pick whatever players. You just got to find out the metrics that make it so that over the course of a season, you're going to win. In this, there are so many other factors, and those unpredictable factors are people. That's how someone could get in trouble, and he may know the perfect lineup to put around Luka. But that don't mean you can do it. This ain't fantasy. So like, there's a disconnect there in understanding that the skill that you need to be good at what he was doing before, it's part of the skill that you need to be good at this job, but it's only part. And half might be being generous for how important that is.
That's a great point. The gambler's a rolling stone, right?
Yeah.
Gambler ain't got to stay tonight. You know what I'm saying? Gambler ain't waking up to get out before the kids leave. No, the gambler, like, hit it and quit it, right? Right? Either we're good or not. I don't know, but peace out. That's where it's going to go.
Might be great for that one night.
Yeah.
However, when it comes to everything else, keeping the roof over the head, getting the kids to school on time, all that, he ain't got those skills.
All our losers were just a charade, and all our reasons start to fade, right? Like, but no, he has to stick around. And the lineup thing is interesting because this is a big thing in baseball now, which is the front office sending down lineups. And this is a thing that has come up at different stops with basketball teams, is front offices sending down lineups because they've run the numbers and it says this, that, and the third or whatever. But the problem with that is it undermines the head coach, right? Because that was the other thing. Carlisle could have very easily been a guy that came and dimed out for that story, because one of the things I thought was interesting in that story by Tim Cato of The Athletic about the Mavericks was the idea that players are like, I'm doing everything you told me to do, and now I'm not playing. And that tells me that the front office is deciding who gets to play. And then once that happens, man, ain't nobody listening to the coach.
And the difference in baseball and basketball is an individual sport. You know, basketball is an interconnected sport. So it's a little different trying to hand those things down. Like, I think the numbers can absolutely tell you who should be playing, where they should be playing, and all that stuff in baseball, because the interaction is lessened. That's not true in basketball. And again, it also, all this affects the team dynamic, which the coach needs to manage. So I can't imagine what it must be like when you're managing team dynamics and who to start, who to sit, what sets to run, when to run them, who to bring off the bench, and then what moments. Like, all that stuff matters. And I don't think that we've gotten to the point where a computer can tell you that.
Mm-mm. No, especially not with basketball players, yeah. Man. Like, football players, you can get them on board, right? Because there's so many people and there's so many levels, and there's kind of an understanding that everybody's got to be on the same page in order to get this done. Basketball does not operate like that at all, right? It's a bunch of band leaders in basketball. A bunch of them. Everybody ready to go solo.
I just imagine one guy with a clarinet and everybody else in a drum major's costume. Just out there, everybody flexing, doing them back splits. And it's just one dude who's like, and everybody else trying to get they shine.
Yeah, that one dude is always working, right? Like, he'll always have a gig. These other cats ain't trying to have gigs, man. They trying to be stars.
Oh, man.
I'm imagining that, like, what it has to be like when, like, you show up for the performance. And, like, the one dude was like, I thought we all was going to wear our uniforms. I wasn't.
Everybody got on a long fuzzy hat and got a staff.
Like, we didn't even issue this. Yeah, I went and got one made.
All I'm sure with the little mini cape.
No, man, these playoffs, we need to get back around and talk about, like, all these injuries in the playoffs. But I'll say this for the playoffs and the injuries. I'm enjoying it. Like, this second round, all of these series in the second round, except for, I guess, Phoenix-Denver, but at least it's over with, they've all been interesting. They've all, like, had an angle, like, even with the guys getting hurt. So, like, we don't have Kawhi Leonard. Not once in your life, though, have you ever turned into a game to watch no damn Kawhi Leonard. It's never happened. And we got an interesting outcome with Paul George going and putting them up. Like, we still got that. Like, these are, I think, interesting playoffs. And I think it's going to be great for the league because getting all them big names out of there is going to force a lot of people who wouldn't otherwise to get acquainted with some of these guys that they might find out that they like. And this is the time for the next generation.
You saw LeBron's tweet where it was like, I knew what was right. And, like, essentially, sorry, fans,
of course
you don't
did.
Get your best.
Of course he did. Of course he did. Of course he saw it was coming. Sorry y'all don't get to see me. My question on that is simply, what was the alternative, man? Because the players did not want to play all these games in the time period that that's there. I totally understand that. And I don't think the owners necessarily wanted the players. Like, these contracts are guaranteed. They got to pay these dudes that's out here getting hurt. But what else were they supposed to do? Ain't nobody out there for love. Everybody's out there for money. And if they didn't play 72 games this year, the money was going to be messed up. Now, I know that the league kind of wanted to wrap this up before the Olympics, but I also think the league wanted to get back onto their regular schedule, their regular place in the sporting calendar. And there were going to be some sacrifices that had to be made in order to do this. I just don't think there's anybody to blame.
Yeah, there's nobody to blame. I don't know what the alternative would have been. I mean, the only alternative would have been everybody just take a loss. And I'm assuming nobody wants to do that, including LeBron. So that's a weird thing. But I think you're right. I haven't been less interested in these years' playoffs because of all the injuries. I hate the injuries. Like, it sucks. I'd rather have healthy guys. I think that's more what I'd like to see is... It's not that I want LeBron and all the big names that are out and AD back in it as much as I want the guys who are participating, the teams that are still in it. Like, I want those guys on the court, and it's just kind of no way around it. They're going to be, it feels like at least, increased injuries when you don't have any rest or any real offseason and you're putting these pressure on these guys. So I hate it, but you're right. I'm still enjoying these playoffs.
Yeah, man. But hey, we got more of it coming. And that is Dominique Foxworth. Check him out at theundefeated.com and every Friday here on The Right Time. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing three times a week. Man, Gabe Bassane handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Oh, by the way, I'm going to be out for a couple weeks. I got some things to do. But I will be back after the 4th of July. Enjoy your holiday. Happy Juneteenth. I guess that's coming up also. All of those things. And I will talk to you guys in a couple of weeks. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.